Was there kind of a disconnect or a struggle you had between sort of reading it as a book, like you would read any other, and kind of seeing it as your husband Paul's, some of his last thoughts and feelings?
There sort of wasn't a distinction. I guess part of it was that I was reading the manuscript in real time as Paul was writing it. So each day or week in the last year of his life, before he died, he was working on it a lot of the time. And it wasn't like a little side project. It was really central to what we were doing every day. We were parenting a newborn and he was working on the book. So everything from his chemo regimen to his medications to, you know, we really thought a lot about how we could help him, you know, preserve the mental focus and the energy to be able to write, because that was sort of turned out to be his final purpose, was writing the manuscript for this book. And so in real time, it felt like a very intimate process. And he wrote things in the manuscript that were more intimate than what he could verbalize. So it was actually very interesting and actually wonderful to have his writing be part of our relationship too at the time, because it gave me a deeper understanding of what he was going through in real time and then helped me help him.
Now, your daughter, Katie, as you mentioned, you know, is growing up without her father, Paul. I wonder how this book will help her get to know him.
I mean, I hope it'll be a big part of her understanding of him. Obviously, a whole community, including our family and friends and his colleagues and, you know, share the memory of him. And so she has a group of people who are invested in helping her understand where she came from. But then to have a really substantial body of work that he wrote, and in a way he was thinking of it as in part a message to her, to give her a sense of who he was and what he thought was important. So, and then the last paragraph of the book is truly a love letter directly to her. So that's sort of one of the prized possessions, is that one paragraph.
In reading it, it seems to me that Paul, with his passion for literature and philosophy and his understanding, you know, obviously his understanding of medicine, that he was almost like the best person to be able to talk about this sort of thing. And I want to know what you think about that.
I've actually thought about this too. And it's like he was sort of uniquely positioned to be able to quickly jump into trying to make sense of it and have words around talking about the experience of being a young terminally ill person. It's sort of funny, because I don't feel like, you know, he was meant to do this or something in some like kind of cosmic sense, but I do feel like, looking back, it's almost like everything in his life prepared him to be able to face this and then put it into words. I have a really similar feeling, and that narrative actually helps me cope with what happened, because I feel like even though he didn't get a chance to spend decades as a neurosurgeon and neuroscientist, you know, he was entering into that profession in order to help people make sense of mortality and about the big questions, you know, what makes us human and how do we take care of each other. And so then for him to be a healer in this other way and to have been able to cope through it, it sort of makes sense to me in a way that that question sort of makes me feel better, you know.
Now, you were kind of seeing what Paul was writing as it was happening. And I wonder, were you surprised by anything that he put down on the page? Things that, like you said, he couldn't vocalize to you?
Yes, somewhat. I mean, I think the things, so he wrote about a rough patch that we were going through in our marriage. He starts the book out by talking about that a little bit. And then he talks about the decision to have a child, and getting pregnant. And there are kind of intimate details about our relationship and our family's decisions. And when I saw that, I was a little bit surprised that he was writing it. So, and then even after he died, the editor said, you know, anything you want to change in the manuscript is fine. If it doesn't make you comfortable to have certain things in there, we can take them out. And my initial reaction was, no, absolutely not. It's Paul's story.
I really want it to be that Paul expressed what it was that he felt was important for him to express. And then I also felt, you know, if I were a reader, those are some of the things that I would relate to and find meaningful are sort of the messy details. So, you know, he does it in a relatively restrained way, but he is sort of addressing the messiness and complexity of what's happening with a marriage and an illness and these, you know, big decisions, including deciding to have a child despite knowing that you're dying.
Following all of the events in the book and all the things that have happened, do you practice medicine differently than you did before?
Yeah, going through this experience with Paul and seeing the physician-patient relationship from the other side, you know, we were both physicians. I'm an internist and he was a neurosurgeon. And then suddenly we're a patient, a dying patient and a caregiver. That experience sort of really revealed to me the depth that that relationship can have between a patient and a healthcare provider. And I see patients, I'm on the faculty at Stanford, and I see patients actually in a much lower stakes situation. I see patients in urgent care, outpatient, at least right now. I'm a general internist. And but even in my brief encounters with patients that I don't even know, it's made me so aware of the need to sort of get to what it is that somebody's hoping for or worried about. So even something as simple as, you know, somebody comes into my office and is very eager to have antibiotics because they have a cough, and I don't think antibiotics are going to help because I think it's a virus. I now understand, you know, to ask the question of, you know, what is it that you're hoping for? What is it that you're worried about? And it might be, you know, I'm doing a work presentation tomorrow, or I'm traveling on an airplane, or my aunt had pneumonia and got really sick. What if I have that? And it even in those seemingly insignificant interactions where someone's, you know, not as ill, I think the things that people are trying to accomplish and or find important are the things that can help you match their medical care to them, you know.
When you're put into a situation like you were, when Paul is diagnosed with a terminal illness, is it scarier, do you think, to have that knowledge and know what's going to happen, or maybe if you weren't physicians to go through that situation?
I think it was the best and worst thing at the same time, and it was kind of the worst because of what you said, which is, you know, we didn't have any illusions about the fact that it was a terminal illness and what the prognosis was. And the two of us looked at his CAT scan together wordlessly, looking at kind of the planes of his organs and seeing tumors in all throughout his lungs and all throughout his spine. So we knew right away we were looking at metastatic cancer. And I knew looking at it right away, I knew that I would hold him as he died and that it would happen relatively soon. And that's a lot to take in a millisecond, you know, as you're looking at this CAT scan. So it was so intense and so painful to have all of that knowledge at once. And then meanwhile, there were some things that were really great. One was we knew how to use the medical system. You know, at one point he was on 15 medications, you know, a bunch of things as needed for pain and nausea and his chemo pill. And but I knew what all of them were, and I knew the side effects, and I knew which order to use them in and which ones could be taken together and not. And I think the task of taking care of somebody who's ill is overwhelming, not just emotionally, but in the details and the nuts and bolts of, you know, taking care of someone through an illness. And so the fact that I was familiar with it was kind of empowering at the same time. And then we also had a language for it. So there was something scary about seeing, you know, understanding the way in which cancer progresses into debility. And, you know, we'd witness it with our own patients. And so we could see, you know, barring a really improbable new development in science, we knew how it would play out, you know, with generally speaking, but we had a language to be able to reflect on it and talk about it because we had seen it through our own patients. So it was really wrenching, and it was also not totally unfamiliar territory. And again, that was sort of the best and worst part about it.
All right. Thank you very much for speaking with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.